Hello and welcome to Inside Modular, the podcast of commercial modular construction brought to you by the Modular Building Institute. Welcome everyone, my name is John McMullen. I'm the marketing director here at MBI. Today I'm very excited to welcome Kevin O'Connor, host of the long-running and Emmy Award-winning television series This Old House. Kevin is here to share his unique perspective on the advantages of off-site construction and what the industry can do to encourage and develop its next generation of workers. Kevin, thanks so much for being here.
I appreciate the invite, John. It's my pleasure to join you.
So tell me about yourself. What's your background and how did you get to become the host of This Old House?
My route to hosting the show is quite unconventional. My previous career was in finance. I was a commercial banker. Which I started after business school, and prior to that was actually working in the legislature here in Massachusetts and the governor's office. I was always interested in construction. My father is an engineer, so we were on his job sites growing up, making money for summer work and college breaks and such like that. Other construction folks in the family. I never went down that path, but I always had a passion for it. And when I first got married, to my wife, Kathleen, we immediately went out and bought a two-family fixer-upper because it was all we could afford, but we both were interested in kind of working with our hands and working on it. And having grown up as a fan of This Old House, as soon as we sort of got into this project and over our heads, we ended up, for some reason, I'm not quite sure why, but we ended up writing This Old House's magazine a letter looking for some information, which led to them reading it, deciding to send a camera crew out and Tom Silva to our house. We filmed a little segment for what was then a brand new show for us called Ask This Old House. Mm-hmm. And out of the blue, 3 weeks later, I got a call and they asked me if I wanted to be the host of the shows. So it was right place, right time. No desire to be in TV, never done any performing or anything like that, but was such a fan of the show and the good folks who were on it that I decided, yeah, why not? If you're going to give me the opportunity to work next to Norm Abram or Tom Silva, I'll take my blue suit off. Told my boss at the bank, I'll be back in about a year, and gave it a go.
Wow. Talk about serendipity.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm a big fan of media. My background is design and multimedia and all that stuff. And I love a good video production. If it's TV, it's commercial, it's film, it's whatever. But I'm even more fascinated by what goes on behind the scenes, particularly This Old House. I was wondering if you could tell me about how an episode of This Old House works. What aren't the viewers seeing that's really critical to the finished episode that we see at home?
Well, I'll start with a little bit of perspective. This is primarily all I do, This Old House, Ask This Old House, but I have been on some other TV shows and seen other production to know that what we do is fairly unconventional in the TV mm-hmm. world. So let me start with that. In terms of how we make it, it always starts with a walk of the job site. The job site or the project dictates the outline for the episode, for the story arc of the entire series. Producers and the folks on the show, we gather, we meet, less me and more of the folks who are professional contractors, talk about what needs to get done, the challenges, the materials going to be used. And that sort of creates the script, if you will. It's an outline for us because we're unscripted. But that sort of dictates the information that we're trying to convey. And then on film days, it's a very lean and mean crew. We're a one camera shoot. Mm-hmm. So we have one camera operator. Nowadays we have a sound guy, but that was not always the case. Camera was doing sound as well. And we are running around basically following the action. And as I mentioned at the outset, we're very unconventional from other television shows out there, primarily because of the one camera shoot, but also we have a legacy of sort of following the action, mm-hmm. which is host walks up to contractor, asks a couple questions, we walk around, we point, we talk. And then we work. And throughout that process, the cameraman is following us. And it means that it's a lightly edited show. It means that there are long, continuous takes. And that is not conventional in television at all. And we've moved away from that a little bit. But the intention was is to make it as real and as honest and as authentic as possible. And so that natural conversation, the walking and talking about the things that we're working on, and then doing the work as the cameraman sort of followed silently is our MO. And we've stuck pretty closely to it over the years.
Cool.
So I think, people who don't understand television may not appreciate it, but it's a very simple and it's a very organic process that's creating the show.
Well, you mentioned how you used to not have a sound guy. The sound was taken, through the camera. Now you have a sound guy. I was wondering if you could talk about how the show and some of the projects that you're featuring have sort of evolved over the course of the show. You've been host for a long time now. Are there other technologies other than sound that you're making use of now that weren't either available or you didn't know to use when you began?
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Before my time, although with the first director that I had as the creator of the show, these are stories that he shared with me. Part of the impetus for that long continuous take is because when the show started and it was on tape, the editing process was literally cutting and taping physical video film together. And so as we understand it, he was very frustrated with that process in the edit room of having to tape and cut and tape and all this type of stuff. So he figured if he did long continuous takes, it would save him a lot of that. So that's sort of the origin. And flash forward to when I started early in my career, I'll give you an example of just some of the technology. Let me paint you a picture. We wanted to do a scene where Kevin arrives on the job site in the pickup truck, introduces himself and the show as he exits the truck, walks up onto the job site, talks to one or two of the contractors, gets inside the house, gets to the back of the house, and then finishes it with a high shot. So to do that, because this is nearly 20 years ago, we built a porch off of the side of the pickup truck. So a platform welded to the side of the pickup truck so that the cameraman could ride alongside me because he had to stick his camera through the window because we didn't have GoPros to stick to the front windshield. He dismounts walking backwards while I get out of the truck. We walk together, stop, see Roger Cook, our landscaper at the time, proceed to go through the building, all one continuous take. I open the door, walk through it, hold it with a foot so that he can get through without having to hold the door. We talked to another contractor inside, exit the house through the back. We're now at 4 or 5 minutes continuous. And then the cameraman who wants to show a high wide of the house backs himself into a scissor lift as I continue to talk and deliver my monologue. And then an operator lifts him to the second story for the final shot. That's the way we did it back then. Nowadays, we can put GoPros into the windshield, SLRs, two or three of them in the truck. Nobody has to ride alongside. We've got drones that can get those high wide shots. And we will cut that scene two or three times. We won't bother to try to get through the door unobstructed in the continuous take. So it's a big, long evolution. It's a lot of sort of nitty gritty. But the technology that's out there in terms of remoteness, smallness, things that fly, all of that has helped us to make a better show and have, be able to do it a lot more easily than we used to.
It's fascinating hearing that history. And I remember, coming up when I was in college, learning about tapes and cutting and editing, and that's digital editing was still sort of new. Switch gears just a little bit. I understand that this old house has utilized modular and offsite construction for a number of its projects over the years, and that you've been able to actually tour some modular factories. I was wondering if you could describe those tours and tell me what you took away from those experiences.
We have done that and we have toured a lot of those facilities. I'll give you a flavor just of some of the different kinds that we have toured. It's not exclusive, of course, but we've gone to places that are very focused, where they fabricate offsite one product. So superior walls, concrete foundations, for example, concrete poured into forms in a factory setting. Rigid foam insulation and aluminum studs applied there so that they can then be lifted onto a truck and delivered to a web to a job site. And then they can be lowered into a foundation pit. And on the job site, you can end up with a higher PSI concrete, making it damp proof or sometimes a waterproof concrete foundation that is put together in a day. And then you've got insulation and it's ready for board on the inside. So that's a sort of a focused offsite fabrication. In addition to that, we've gone to places where they have fabricated the entire home, pre-cut, where they can make all the walls and the roof parts. They can install the windows, lay it flat, ship it to the job site, install there. We've gone to places where they are put together and trucked in their entirety, sort of more of the mobile home sort of thing where it gets craned into place. And we've done them for high-end timber frames, authentic historic recreations, as well as sort of quicker, more economical, fast build. So we've had the chance to sort of see it all over the years, not all within the residential world, though, I would suggest, would say, you know, not the big commercial stuff that I think maybe more of your listeners might be used to. We keep it to the residential. See a wide breadth of operations.
I was wondering if you could tell me maybe one or two ways that you've utilized offsite construction or for the show. I imagine there must be, quite a few ways on any given production to, save time, save costs. I was wondering if you could just give a few examples.
We went down to New Jersey after Superstorm Sandy, and we worked on three homes that were damaged. One was a cottage. It was more of a conventional renovation. Another one was sort of a home from the 80s, that we lifted an entire story and were able to put helical piles underneath it. And then the third house was too far gone and it had to come down. So our contractors, Early Homes, given both the labor shortage, but also an acute shortage caused by all of the houses that were damaged from Superstorm Sandy. They went and they ended up ordering, having houses built off-site and then craned into place so that they were put together in about a week's time. So that's, sort of one example of how we've used the modular construction to accelerate the building process, but also to get us resources that we couldn't otherwise get. A home that was manufactured, I believe, in Pennsylvania, where the resources were not interrupted in terms of manpower, as well as materials. And you couldn't find materials or manpower in the New Jersey area because tens of thousands of people were doing the exact same thing at the exact same time. So that's just one example. But we've done it for custom high-end homes. We've done it for parts and components for renovations and restorations and such. That's pretty much across the board.
Well, you mentioned the labor shortage in particular to Sandy, but I want to put a pin in that talking. I want to come back to that in just a minute. You've been on more construction sites than I can probably count and seen just about every different way to build or rebuild a home. In all of these projects, and you alluded to some of these in your response just now, but in all these projects, what's the biggest benefit to utilizing offsite or modular construction from your point of view?
In our world, I think the single biggest benefit is time. So we can accelerate the time frame of a project, and that's beneficial to the contractor for a variety of reasons. But if the foundation can go up in a day or so, then he doesn't have his crew dedicated to, say, 3 or 4 weeks. Or he doesn't have subcontractors building forms there for 10 days, putting them up, taking them down. So it accelerates the project. An acceleration of time for contractors who are in our business is key because it allows them to increase the workflow over the course of the year. Maybe they can complete 12 projects instead of 10, which is always good. So time is probably the number one factor, and close behind it is precision. There are things that you can do offsite. You can get a higher quality. You can get a better quality on the job site. Again, I go back to the superior walls, but it's not the only example. You can get a stiffer, more damp proof wall because of the way they cure the concrete in the factory. You can get a higher R value, these types of things. So we use it for timing, certainly, but we also use it for improved quality.
So here's the question for you. We've talked about new technologies that you've incorporated into your show, new technologies that have been advantageous to the projects that you feature on your show. Why can't the greater construction industry sort of do the same? Why is it sort of stuck where it has been for decades upon decades?
Well, I think it's complicated. I certainly don't have all the answers. I thought about it a lot. And in my mind, in the residential construction business that we're familiar with, if I had to put my finger on it, I would say that the number one limiting factor is the size of these companies. They tend to be very small, very geographically focused. And so there's a couple stats that I just keep in my mind to help paint this picture. There are roughly 600,000 construction companies in the country, and a full quarter of them, 25%, have one individual. It's a sole proprietor, single fabricator type of a construction company, obviously using subs, but think about that, 25% an individual person. And if you bump that number up to 20 or fewer employees, which is kind of the definition of a small company, that percentage exceeds 90%. So across the industry, they are very small companies focused on a very limited geographic focus. And I think size limits your ability to innovate. And I think size limits your ability to access resources, whether it's offsite construction or the materials you need or the latest technology, exposure to technology. I think it's an inhibitor to recruiting. And so, again, it is complicated, and I think there's more than just one thing, but I think the small size of these companies is what constrains the productivity and their ability to innovate. And if I could go a little further, productivity in the construction industry, as a whole, has generally been flat since the end of World War II on a year-over-year basis. And that's pretty damning to the industry when you think about things like agriculture or manufacturing, where their productivity has increased over 1500% by comparison. But it paints a very blunt picture. If you were to take the construction industry and then start to bifurcate it, what you see is that the smaller construction companies are in fact stagnated when it comes to productivity. But by comparison, the larger components of the construction industry, industrial, some of the larger manufacturing, you end up getting in the research that I've seen, you end up getting a 20 to 40% increase in productivity in construction compared to the smaller companies. And so I think that sort of reinforces my thinking that size is an inhibitor to these things.
Is there anything the industry can do about that? I mean, I know we can't tell every sole proprietor, hey, go hire more people and rent a section of a factory and start automating. That's not realistic. But is there anything that the industry or these small companies within the industry can do, be it commercial or residential, that they could do to increase their productivity and make use of these newer technologies that are now at our disposal?
Well, I wouldn't dismiss growth. I do think growth is important, growing the size of the company. If you think about, I have a wonderful mentor, Ted Benson from Benson Wood, who does a lot of timber framing and now offsite construction. He's a very high quality home, top of his trade. He and I have spoken many times. He knew he had to grow his company in terms of manpower, throughput, number of jobs, so that growth could support him creating a factory floor, him buying top-end German CNC machines to get some of the work done. So I think growth needs to be part of that equation. To your point, a lot of people go into this because they want to be sole proprietors or they want to run small businesses. It's a family business, and so I don't have any expectations that they are going to change the size of their companies just in pursuit of productivity. So the solution for them lies in part, I think, with embracing the technology and productivity that's coming their way because of the sophistication of manufacturers. There are a lot of manufacturers who are solving the problem for the small contractors. It's a simple example, but I use it a lot. I think about the sheathing that we use on residential construction and renovation right now. The Huber product, the zip sheathing, where you have not just the traditional sheet of plywood, if you will, OSB, I get it, but not just a traditional sheet of sheathing, but then you have the water-resistant barrier in there, the protection against air infiltration. And so several steps have been reduced to a single step in many cases. And the manufacturer is the one who innovates and brings that innovation and hopefully that productivity to the smaller contractor if they will go out and embrace those materials. And I see it all over the place, whether it is ICF forms, insulated concrete forms, that a carpenter can now put up the form for a foundation wall, and a quick pour gives them not just a foundation, but a doubly insulated wall, these types of things. So to me, if you can't grow, then you should reach for the products that are coming from the large manufacturers, where innovation has been developed by them and embedded in these products to hopefully speed up your job site. We've got a company that we work with recently that does prefabricated exterior trim. So you literally give them your window order cut sheet. Now they have the size of every single window that you're putting into your house. And what they will do is they will deliver to you the exterior trim with the head casing, side casings, sill, apron, and all that put together. It's higher quality, it's out of the right materials. And more importantly, the small contractor isn't sending a laborer around the house two or three times and up and down two stories to trim out 20 or 40 windows with individual cuts. So that level of embracing innovation from fabricators, I think, is a great way for smaller companies to improve their productivity.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you. I'd love to talk to you about your experiences with construction crews and experts you worked with around the country. I know we put a pin in that labor shortage comment you made earlier. I'm gonna pull that pin right now. There have been scores of talented people that you've worked with over the years, the crews that you interview on your shows, the contractors that you talk with. It's always fascinating for me to see them work because they're so good at what they do, particularly when there's a camera on them. And I see these people and they're doing a great job, and there always seems to be enough people doing the jobs that you're featuring. Yet there seems to be some kind of disconnect within the industry. Why? I know there's an overwhelming need for more tradespeople in the industry at every turn. What's the disconnect in your opinion? Why are there not more people coming into the industry? Why is there such a lack of new interest in the trades, and how do we change that?
Again, I think it's complicated. I think there are a lot of answers to the question. In my mind, it starts with money. So, across the board, at least within residential construction, entry level and mid level wages are below national averages. And I think young people make rational decisions. When you take them as a group, they make pretty rational decisions. They look at what else is available out there. And there are a lot of jobs. I'm not suggesting that they're necessarily fulfilling jobs, great jobs, or whatever, but there are a lot of jobs that provide higher pay, better benefits, and you could argue more comfortable working conditions. And when you look at the list of things that folks, when surveyed, young people, when surveyed, are looking for in a job, they want to have meaningful work. They want good pay. That's always top of the list. They want good pay. But then they want meaningful work, impactful work, and they want a path to advancement. So that path to advancement requires training, exposure to technology, mentorship, all these types of things. The construction industry on the residential side generally is low barriers to entry. There's lots of physical manual labor that can be done by a lot of people. And that low barrier to entry, I think, keeps wages down, which is why I don't think advancing the technology or the skill level within the trade should be something that people should be threatened by. I think that can actually lift wages, but right now they tend to be lower. I do believe that the physical nature of the job is an inhibitor to a lot of young people. In fact, there's a list of what they want when they're looking for a job, and there's also a list of what they don't want when they're looking for a job. And the first thing that's typically on the don't want is hard physical labor. And so I think the construction industry has a pricing problem, and I also think it has a work approach problem. Now, that being said, I do think it's a great place for young people to go into. I think there are a lot of benefits that it can offer. It's not all about how do I make the most money? You couldn't pay me any amount of money to be a marketer or an engineer at Facebook. I couldn't do it. It doesn't matter how sexy the job sounds or how much money or the benefits or whatever. Just couldn't do it. So there is room for this, but I do think that the industry has got, sort of those two problems, which is, too low pay, too hard work, manual work, mind-numbing work. And I think there are ways to improve that. But those are, those are big hurdles to overcome. And I think the industry has to look inward. There is a cultural message as well. We have glorified the college education, and I think that we have sort of poo-pooed some of these other jobs. We've heard this argument before. I think there's a measure of truth to it, but I think it's sort of singular dimensional. I don't think it's the only reason. And I do feel like that pendulum is sort of starting to swing back another way. I do think that, when there's a national discussion about whether or not we have to forgive $1 trillion worth of college debt, it really wakes you up to the idea that says, well, why is there so much to begin with? Why is there so much debt to begin with? And so I think that pendulum is swinging back. I saw a stat, recently that when it comes to over the past decade, college enrollment is down 15%, whereas apprenticeships at existing companies is up 50%. So I think that's an indication of the pendulum sort of starting to swing. Employers realizing that a college degree is not giving them everything that they need in their young people, and then leaning into doing the apprenticeships so that they can train in themselves, but also young people, more young people having the courage to say, college is not for me, and there's no shame in that, and going into these other industries such as construction.
Well, that was a fascinating statistic. I hadn't seen that. Of course, you're speaking with some knowledge of this particular segment of the industry. I know that through this old house, you have been working hard on a Generation Next initiative, which is a feature on many of the episodes of this old house. I was wondering if you could talk about that program, what its goal is, and what have you been able to accomplish with it?
Generation Next is this old house's attempt to show the audience that going into the trades is not only a respectful and an honorable thing to do, but also can be a lucrative thing to do and a very fulfilling thing to do because it can provide you with a career. And, for us, I will say that it is primarily about messaging. We are not affecting a lot of young people. What we do is we go out and we find young people who are thinking about coming into the trades and letting them be apprentices on our job sites and profile their journey on the show. We're not touching a lot of lives immediately because we only have a few apprentices who come through it every year. But the messaging is important to us because we have a wide audience, and we're hoping that both parents and young people see that, and they see that these kids are out there fulfilled, learning, not necessarily having to acquire college debt, and are potentially on the path to a fulfilling and lucrative career. So for us, it's trying to tell that story and calling attention to both the shortage of labor in the trades, but also the potential for people who think about going into it. In terms of his success, we are one voice amongst many voices who have done a very good job of telling this story and delivering this message. So it's impossible for me to gauge how successful we've been or not. We've had great feedback, nothing but positive comments. But again, I think we're just one of many voices who has been delivering this message.
Are there lessons that modular and offsite manufacturers can take from what you've learned? What can they be doing, modular and offsite manufacturers? What can they be doing to attract and develop new talent?
That's a really good question. I feel as if the folks on your side are better at it than sort of the folks in the residential on our side and the residential construction. But I guess if I had to say one thing, I would call people's attention to they need to start early. These decisions are being made by these young people at a very early age. I have a high school senior right now. He's my oldest, 2 younger than him in middle school. The conversation about what are you going to do after graduation, it started sophomore year, maybe freshman year, so that kind of thought process are you college bound? Are you trades bound? Are you some other industry bound? That's something that happens at 14 years old. They're extremely young. That process starts at a very young age. And so as we've gone out and tried to look at for apprentices to join us on the job site, you know, the first reaction that we all have is, my goodness, they're really young. You know, they're high school. Where are they going to live? Who are they going to stay with? You know, these types of things. But that is when the thought process is happening, when those decisions are being made for many of these people. So I guess that's the one sort of takeaway that I've seen from it, which is start young. Decisions are being made at young ages. So start young. Get your message to them, make it clear, make it appealing to somebody of that age. And I think it should reap some rewards for attracting folks into this industry.
So as a father, and I have a stepson who's a senior in high school, and as a professional in the industry, what's your pitch to young adults, to recent graduates, be it high school or college, who are considering their options? Why should they consider work in the trades?
That's a great question. A couple of things. First of all, I do believe you have to do what you like to some extent. We all got to do things we don't like. But in general, we've got to be in a field that we're excited about and that we like. And if working with your hands or being on a job site or working in a field where there are tangible results that you see at the end of every day, then embrace that and know that that's sort of who you are and that there are careers out there that can scratch that itch. The second thing, that I say to these folks is, to me personally, I need to be doing things. I need to be active. I need to feel like I'm making a contribution. And I believe that this industry of building, of construction, of transformation, is one of the best ways to get that done, as opposed to being in a cube or in front of a computer or these types of things. I think it needs some gussying up, but I think that's a great place to be. And then the biggest thing that I tell the kids, is in terms of your financial security, this offers a great opportunity because you don't necessarily need to borrow money to go into debt for the higher education. You can get started right away and get ahead of other folks in terms of years on the job and earning potential. And to me, the most exciting thing is that if you're good at it, in very short order, you can be your own boss. You can run the business. You can own your small contracting company at a young age. When I was at the bank, I was not going to own the bank. It was not going to happen. If you want to be an independent business person, if you want to own your own company, if you want to have a lot of control over your career, your earnings, who you work with, and what you do, this is a phenomenal opportunity to get all of those things done. And I think that excites a lot of young people.
Where do you see the industry in 10 years? What are your hopes for people coming into the industry, people already in the industry? Where are we in 10 years?
I'm not sure we're anywhere different than where we are now, sadly. It is a big stone to move. But I am hopeful that as a whole, we raise our standards, that the level of work becomes more rewarding and impactful, less physical, that there's more of a commingling of physical talent as well as mental skills where we embrace technology. I think all of those things will bring more people into the field, which I think can only help us. And I do think that we've got some sort of systemic problems in terms of not able to build enough homes for a growing population, and not being able to build enough houses in areas that are growing very fast, whether they're all moving to Denver or the Southeast or whatever. And I think those constraints have the potential for breaking some of these habits and causing this industry to embrace different types of construction, because those are the only types of construction that will be able to build quickly and in large volume and at high qualities. So from stress comes strength. And my hope is that some of the things that are straining our industry right now will also be the things that help us to break free, to become stronger, and to become better at sort of what we do in terms of productivity, in terms of wage growth, and in terms of making this a more attractive industry for young people to look at.
Very good. Last question. What's next for you? Are there any big projects on your horizon?
The next thing for me is a lot of the same of what I've been doing. I'm this old house guy through and through, so we'll continue making the two shows. We as a company continue to evolve. We're very pleased to announce, actually today, May 25th, that we're dropping a new television show. We're owned, our parent company is Roku, so we've got a beautiful show where we have collaborated with a nonprofit volunteer organization called Team Rubicon. It's a veteran-led organization that goes in and around the country after storms to help clean up, to rebuild, to assist our neighbors, people who have had a really bad day because their homes have been destroyed or damaged. So we're releasing that series today. And so, me personally and our company is in the world of building, but also storytelling. And so we're going to continue to make more shows about what we've already done, this old house and Ask This Old House, and new shows like Team Rubicon and others like those, where we can celebrate building, people actually working, making changes and impactful things in our lives. So I think, the future for me is more of what we do, and make it better every year as we go forward.
Very exciting, very exciting. So if people are interested in watching Team Rubicon, where is that found?
Thank you for that. Good point. It is streaming as of today on Roku. So you can get the Roku box, the Roku stick, or if you have a smart TV, you can download the app. Roku is free streaming. There's no cost, so anyone can watch it. And all the episodes drop, so people can binge all of them if they want.
Thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate your time. I know you're an exceptionally busy guy. I appreciate your insights and the experiences that you've shared, just all around. Thank you very much.
John, it's been my pleasure, and as I said before, thank you for the invite.
My name is John McMullen, and this has been another episode of Inside Modular, the podcast of commercial modular construction. Until next time.